What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff?
Oh. Well, we're recording an episode. Who knows whether it's coming out this week, like next week, the week after
we
that.
I mean...
And we want you to know that. That's the forward to this play we're about to do, this radio play.
Because Jeremy is going to Marrakesh.
That's crazy.
So we have to record. We have to get all of our content done now.
He really goes to the best places.
Have you ever been there?
No. I've never been. All the places he goes are so exotique. I just can't imagine.
But when
Thailand,
you were...
Because
I was talking to Neil about his travels with Trisha. Did you ever go to Athens?
I've been there, but not for dancing.
Oh. Why did you go there?
Yars and yars ago, this is a story.
Yay! A story.
All my best friends were dancing for Lions Ballet, Laurel Key, Drew Jacoby, Brett Conway, etc. And they had this weird situation where they were performing in Europe, and then there was like a two-week break in between European engagements, so they gave the company the option, like, you can fly back, or you can just stay in Europe on your own dime and meet up in Germany or whatever. So most of the people just stayed in Europe and had a two-week vacation. Drew and Laurel and Josh went to Spain. And that's where Drew told the ice cream lady she wanted more. Do you remember that story?
Uh-uh. What's that story? Was that in the Jeremy's trimming plan?
I don't know. Drew was, you know, topless on the beach in Spain. And then they went to get ice cream, she and her husband Josh, pre-baby. Uh-huh. And then the ice cream lady didn't give her as much ice cream as she gave to Josh. And so she looked at the ice cream lady. She has no Spanish. And she just said, mas.
And did the ice cream lady say why she gave her less? Was she was
No, but I think she did give her more.
Oh, that's good.
And it was also where Drew and Josh got called stupid tourists.
Stupid tourists. By who?
Just a person. Oh, if you're, yeah. You know, someone like you and I. Right. Curious.
Absolutely.
And then, okay, so long story short, the three, Laurel, Drew, and Josh go to Spain. They go to Greece. Mm-hmm. Mm. Nope. They go through Paris. I meet them in Paris.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
24. And then we fly to Greece together. I leave my digital camera in the plane.
That must have been heartbreaking for you because you loved taking photos.
I had already taken a million beautiful photos in Paris.
Yeah.
My first trip to Paris.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
First trip
photos.
On my Canon Elf. I took a million pictures of Paris. Uh-huh. Took a tiny plane over to Greece. Left it in the thing. And it was the puddle jumper from Athens to Paros or something, where we went to islands. Mm-hmm. And so we had this beautiful trip to Greece where...
But so, and then how did you feel when you realized the camera was in the plane? Did you cry?
No. I'm sure I got a fever, you know, like body fever.
Broke a sweat, slight chills.
And then I...
Let it go.
I let it go. I think I was like, there's no way in Greece you're going to get your phone back. You could feel that things were, that it was chaos.
Right, right.
Like we were getting off on the tarmac with chickens and stuff. You know, it wasn't, it was an island.
Right.
And
where were you in Greece?
We went to a place called Paros and then took a boat to an even smaller island called Antiparos. And we stayed in this beautiful, it was off season. We stayed in this like incredible, like, you know, concrete Greece thing. Nobody was
incredible
there.
Incredible concrete grease thing.
You know, stone, you know, what is that called? Smushed mud. Covered in white
Adobe?
Paint. Adobe. Adobe. There's no basement in the Alamo. Adobe.
Isn't that what?
It's Adobe. Steve. It was Greek Adobe.
Greek in an Adobe fortress on Antiparos.
Yes, and nobody was there. Literally just like stray dogs running about. And what that was where Brett was driving us home one night from the village town where we were eating.
I love how you're telling this story as if I've heard it before because it's very old timey to be like, and that was where.
Yeah.
You know, as if.
Well, all these like strange catchphrases that have like stayed in my life came from that period of my life.
Not all.
Yes, came from that period, for
right?
Sure,
because
sure. Not just
this is
trip,
when we were
right.
We were driving home from town one night. Brett was continually trying to order food as if he was Greek, because he had a Greek boyfriend at the time, and he would be like, "We would like the boiled greens." Like this, is how you can do it too. I have a feeling that's
absolutely
a boiled greens. I was like, "Well, in English, just boiled greens."
Wait, he would like do an accent?
Yeah,
and just say it in English.
Yes. That's
okay.
Correct.
Absolutely. That is absolutely what I do.
So
except the accent's always French.
Driving down very, you know,
narrow
road one night. The narrowest roads in Greece. You can't imagine. Brett and Laurel were driving smart cars in Greece and like almost falling off cliffs because huge pothole. It was so scary. And Josh and Drew were on a Vespa. So that was all of us. We couldn't even, the three of us, fit in a smart car, me and Laurel and Brett. So we had to have two. At any rate. So we were driving home and it was like just getting dark and then suddenly the car like jerked to a stop and we were all like, oh my God. And Brett just calls out, oh, kitty. Because he almost ran over a cat.
Wait.
Oh, kitty.
How is oh kitty about a catch? I've never heard you use
it. Went
oh,
on
kitty.
For years, oh kitty, and then it fell off, you know. But
when would it come up? Like, would you ever like yell it?
Well,
class?
I told it to my friend Veronica when it happened, and she couldn't believe it. She like laugh cried for years, yeah. And then every time anything would happen, she'd be like, oh kitty.
Oh kitty. It also really sounds like okay in a way, so it does sort of have a like. Next time I go for okay, I'll go for oh kitty.
That was the trip where Drew and Laurel were singing that Shakira song, but I had never heard it.
That one?
Well, yes, that one. I had never
My
heard
hips don't lie.
Exactly. I'd never heard the song, but they were constantly like, hey, baby, when you talk like that, you make a woman go mad. And I was like, I love this song. Never heard it.
You still haven't heard it?
I have heard it now.
Remember when Shakira was in that Animals movie? It's like the zoo gone wild.
Yes.
And she's
that
like
was
the
a
main,
good movie. She was a llama.
It was a good movie.
Yeah,
is
Zootopia.
Late.
Yes, she plays a bad dog in it. Bad guy pig or
I think she's like the mayor maybe.
No,
she's an evil sheep.
Exactly, evil sheep.
She's an
Thank
evil
you.
Sheep. Yeah,
a bad guy dog.
That movie was good.
Yeah, it was good. And that Ginny. Round face played the main rabbit.
Oh, yeah, who I met years and
From
years ago.
From that Mormon show.
Yes, and even before that,
We're
like
being very
like
vague.
A hit TV show. What is her name?
Ginny.
Couldn't do it if you had a gun to my head. Beeren? Beeren.
No, that's incorrect.
It's Ginny Beeren.
No, it's more.
Who's that?
It's more normal than that.
So I did this play called Dead End.
Who's that by?
Sydney Kingsley.
Okay.
And it was directed by Nikki Martin. She's dead now. But,
she is a man?
It was, yes. Nikki Martin was an old theater queen, had so many incredible stories that she told me. I remember Nikki Martin once, when we were doing Dead End the second time at the Huntington, which is where I did it with Ginny. She was in the... Your coffee, almost.
Ginny!
I love her. And it's about 1930 something in New York, Upper East Side, these dead end kids. She was in with all of the kind of chorus. I remember being at a party with her one night and I was like, so what are you going to do after college? And she literally was like, I'm going to be famous. And I was like, wow, okay, well, acting's really
Jeremy's
hard.
Looking it up.
And whatever. And next thing I know, she was on that hit TV show and then in Big Love and then on that other TV show about Jennifer Goodwin. I love her.
Ginny.
Her name is Ginny. It says right there.
Jennifer Goodwin.
It says, yeah.
Remember Matt Goodwin?
Oh, yeah. Hi, Matt Goodwin. Wait, so, and then, you know who else was in that play with me?
Let me think about this for a second. What year?
Is
it a person I know?
2000. It was either 99 or 2000.
Is this a person I know?
She's famous now. She's very famous now.
Catherine Hahn.
Yeah. And I've told that story about us being backstage listening. I've told that story
this
so many times.
This is a crying story where
yeah,
you have to cry?
Well, we had to come running out on stage. I've told this
but
story.
But you're laughing. She is so famous now.
She is.
She has her own TV shows.
Literally.
She's on posters.
Catherine, you've nailed it. We used to talk on the phone. Now, you know, I... Probably saw her.
Did you see her big musical number on the Transparent finale thing?
It was incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I didn't watch Transparent. And I didn't see that show. It was just a show I didn't see.
I really feel you should watch it. There are
I remember things Stuart that, said that to me too.
Judith Light does throughout the entire arc of the show that you're not going to believe, because the first season you're going to be like, stop. Like, stop, Judith Light. You can't be on TV like this. Mm. And then it evolves in a way that you can't believe it.
I loved that final episode of Transparent so much. Full tears, cried. Everyone was so, the way they ate that food.
The way they performed on that show is unbelievable.
I've always found that brother, that actor, sexy.
One of the Duplasses.
Yes.
What is his last
name? Duplass brothers. Jay. Who knows? Anyhow. Yeah, it was really, really a great show.
Three actors as siblings really like our sibling. Like,
incredible.
The way they interact. The sister, whose name I don't know, the oldest sister, Sarah.
She's incredible.
She's one of the greatest TV actresses I have ever seen.
I agree with that.
The most natural. Her emotions are just so available.
Yeah.
She was on some show you love, no? Revenge or something like that.
I don't.
Malice. What was it called?
Was she in Revenge? Was she the therapist who gets put in the box
by
the
girl? We have a fact checker today.
I think she's the therapist who gets put in the box in the, like, freight and one of those.
Was that the Glenn Close?
No, Revenge was this incredible show.
What was the Glenn Close?
That is called Damages.
Okay.
And I loved both Revenge and Damages. I really. There is a part in Revenge where her name is Stole. Something Stole.
Ooh.
The main evil woman in Revenge.
Okay.
I can't do it. You know who it is.
Okay.
It's Stole.
That's their last name?
That's her last name.
The actress's last name. Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, she goes up to this painting.
I used to work for these people in Seattle. The Stole. Kent Stole was the director of P&B. I was a trainee.
It's not her. It's not her. She goes up to a painting by, couldn't do this either, and then she stabs a knife in it.
Is it a famous painting?
Uh-huh. But it's a de Kooning, but you realize it's just a fake de Kooning and it was hiding this thing in it.
I love in movies when there's a painting behind a painting. Here
Revenge.
We go.
It's her. Wait. Oh, she was in Revenge. So the actress who you love, who was the sister, was in Revenge.
And what is her name?
I don't know. Jeremy hasn't figured that out yet. He just showed me a screen grab of her in Revenge.
I do follow her on Instagram.
Her name is Amy Landecker. We'd love to have you on. And I believe she plays a therapist. She plays the therapist in Revenge. And the girl puts her in a freight box. I saw,
Succession.
I also caught up on something.
Succession. Great British.
Midsummer.
Oh!
I did it.
Long time past.
I know. I love when I finally see a movie that everyone else saw, and I literally heard nothing about. I met Ari Aster.
The director.
I met him, and I was like, great movie, but I was hoping he would just say about Hereditary.
Right.
Great. He did such a great movie, and then I was able to walk away. But, because I hadn't seen Midsommar yet. Loved it. Loved
Isn't
it much
fun?
More than, I mean, it's just, I loved it much more than Hereditary, which is, if anyone heard that episode, I felt mixed on. It felt so solid. The boyfriend was too camp for me.
Too camp dum-dum.
He really felt.
Because the main girl's so really real?
She is.
Really real.
So the next movie we have to watch, which we haven't seen yet, is Lady Macbeth.
She's going
to
be in Little Women.
Right. But her sort of breakout performance was in this film called Lady Macbeth, which I kept meaning to watch. And it's a slow burn. And
She's a British, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
She was.
They really know how to make
them. So incredible.
So amazing.
I couldn't. No, 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 no. Like her.
It's a little bit
other...
like when I saw Peter Pan last summer. It was like it was like certain kinds of performances and other kinds of performances.
Oh, that's how you felt when you saw Midsommar?
A little bit, because she was really real.
Uh-huh.
And I felt the Swedish people were really real. I was like, uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
And then the rest of the American people, I was like, what movie are you in?
Huh.
A little bit.
Well, there was a thing of I wish I could remember her name. Her last name is Paul.
It doesn't matter.
Anyhow, she was fantastic.
Fantastic.
I thought, like, what if the boyfriend was someone who I felt anything for? What is true in both of those films is Jeremy just gave you
He doesn't like when I have snot.
Oh, when you were sniffling?
Sorry, everybody.
It is really the thing that drives him nuts. Don't put that on the table. Put it in the trash, please.
Okay.
Florence Pugh.
Pugh.
Pugh, Jack Raynor, Jack Raynor, who I've never heard of, Will Poulter, it doesn't matter to me who this cast is. When she sat on the couch in the boys' like apartment or whatever, mm-hmm.
and they like didn't want her there,
and the Swedish guy looked at her, I instantly knew the rest of the film. And Jeremy was like, "If you do, text it to me. I don't believe you." And I was like, "Okay." And I wrote it all down. And what I wrote was everything I said. I was like,
"Wow,
she'll be the May Queen." Do you want to? It's taking him too long to find the note.
I couldn't have known. Like,
she'll be the May Queen. She will have to choose someone to sacrifice, and will choose her boyfriend. All the other boys are gonna die. This is the note I sent. and the Swedish guy has just like, I understand it because he says his parents are dead, and I believe that they died too because of whatever this thing is he's part of. And it was because he kept showing her these images, and all the images, at least that I scanned from his phone, were women. And I was like, oh, there will be this very, it's going to go in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was right. I still loved it. And
truly, tremendously beautiful,
mm-hmm.
beyond.
None of the other thing that I appreciate about in both Hereditary and this film is the violence really doesn't bother me. I don't feel like, ugh.
No, I was bothered in Hereditary, but I wasn't bothered in Midsommar. Even when, like, well, it was horrible when the old people fell from the rock and then they had to smash the one's head with the hammer.
Well, as soon as you got to that scene and there was the guy with a mallet, I was like, oh, he has that mallet in case someone jumps and they don't die right away. I was like, that's the only reason you have a big mallet like that.
Terrible.
I laughed. The other thing I love about both of these movies is the comedy.
Uh-huh.
The insertion of comedy in them is so funny. And so I laughed so hard throughout Midsommar. I thought it was so, I really continually laughed. What about the, did you relate to, I Want You to Want Me when the dust got blown in the face of Jack Raynor? He turned around.
Now, Jack Raynor, is that the boyfriend?
It's your moment with Barton.
That's right.
Yeah.
I really couldn't deal with the dum-dum guy in the movie. I thought he kind of...
Her boyfriend?
No. He's a dum-dum too. But the real...
The guy with the eyebrows.
No, the real dum-dum guy. Yeah, he has eyebrows. You're right.
Yeah, who has like the kind of like Jack Nicholson.
The one who, I think he peed on the rock or whatever.
He pees on the ancestral tree.
Right.
Uh-huh.
He was bothersome. I was like, too much comedy.
Well, what I was kind of curious about is placing it out here that for Ari Aster's next film, I want to help with the casting of the men.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was the way I felt about Hereditary, too. I was like, yes to these women. I'm not buying
the performances. Oh, really? I thought the son was very good in Hereditary.
I just didn't.
You didn't believe it?
I could tell he really believed it. I just wasn't. I just was like, I don't know.
I thought the Swedish guy was great.
Yes. Yeah. The Swedish guy was great.
Yeah. All the Swedes were
all
great.
All the Swedes were tremendous. Great. I loved that older guy who claps in the face of the boy of the boyfriend and goes, "What's happening to me?" And the guy just claps in his face and then turns back. That reminded me of you.
I don't remember that.
They're sitting at a table. They've taken the tea. She's the May Queen. She's sitting at the top of the table. Everything's moving. I love when she would look at... She'd bring her hands up and the leaves would sort of wrap by her hands and then go back down.
Beautiful.
And she just like... places her hands back down and kind of looks
whoever
to the side.
Designed the floral arrangements in that movie for those crowns and stuff. Bravo, brava.
Her walking around in that giant, like, tent of
flowers
at the end, just moaning and
all
crying.
All those strange structures on that property. It was tremendous.
Incredible. What about all of the detail painting work inside of the...
Well, I also felt like, what a, like, simple way to make a movie. Just, like... You know, rent out a plot of
location.
Land and then just build these simple buildings and go to town. I heard it was actually torturous filming that movie.
I really, in watching it, was like, this looks... So, I think it also looked really hard for me because I was like, it's a lot of being outside in the sunlight.
So,
like, gosh. I was like, that is...
Sunscreen station, please.
Honey. I love the part when they go down and then they walk by the bear in the cage and haven't commented on it. That made me laugh. But the inside painting, all of that sort of like, all of that painting in the main structure where all of the 18 to 36 year olds slept,
mm-hmm.
I was like, this is insane. Or when he goes into that weird room to talk about if he's going to have sex mm-hmm. with a girl and it's all black and white, small painting.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, whoever did this, Queens, congratulations.
Labor of love. Thrown in the trash.
Congratulations.
So I liked straight after filming, right in a dumpster.
Had to be. Had to be. Nowhere to go. Nowhere to go. And you loved it, yeah?
I loved it. Yeah. It was hard for me at the beginning. I was like, these actors are torture to me, except for the woman.
Except for her, right.
And then, well, here's an interesting thing. It was one of those movies where I sat down and I was asleep before the previews were over.
Oh, man.
And I slept through the opening scene.
Oh, you missed the parents?
Yeah.
That's such a bummer.
And so then Stuart told me about it later.
Creepy. I think that's sort of the creepiest part of the film.
Because I woke up 5 minutes in and I was like, what's happening?
And he was like,
I was like, why is she so sad?
Creep.
That is so sad.
That is literally that is absolutely you. Absolutely for sure. That's it.
But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great film. It was a while ago.
I wish you would have seen the beginning is really incredible of when it shows that, because when the firemen come in and they've like follow these tubes that have gone from the exhaust, and like one's going to the parents' room, and then it pans to like her sister's room, and she's duct taped the tube to her mouth. One eye is like
bulged
and like white, and then there's just vomit through the duct tape all down, and it just goes over her and then out the window into the snow, like it'll do on the plane. I loved those. I was really here for it.
I missed it.
I'm so here for it.
He has a sick mind, Ari Aster.
I don't know.
What a way to kill your parents, you know?
I don't know, it seems like in the media. I feel like I found it, I really enjoyed it. I loved everyone like moaning and like kind of improvising at the end when the guys are burning in the building.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what I wanted more from the end of Suspiria in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Was something kind of more unleashed than choreographic.
I did definitely I got swept up in the catharsis of the end of that movie, Midsommar. I was like, yay!
What about when she was dancing around the maypole and she starts speaking Swedish?
Amazing.
Did you love?
Tremendous!
I really, and she's laughing while doing it.
I was laughing during the maypole when she starts to get a little dizzy.
Well, and also when the girls would like hit each other and collapse.
I loved that.
And then we would jump up laughing. Didn't it make you want a maypole?
Yeah.
Yeah, I also thought while watching it, I felt like you would want to live in this community.
Because
it's like,
yeah, I'd keep myself busy.
Yeah, I feel like they do crafts, and at 72, you're gone.
I don't love that part where you jump off a rock.
You don't?
That's terrifying. But I feel like when you've spent your whole life knowing it's going to happen, you know, you've psychologically prepared.
They didn't seem too prepared.
They seemed sad.
They seemed pretty like, this is a lot. I also felt like I was like, she's not 72. And then later there was a woman who I was like, she's 72.
Oh, right.
I was like,
how come she's not dead?
I was like, wait a second. And then I was like, this doesn't.
We didn't get a lot of information about the crazy face guy. Although we do know that he was produced by inbreeding.
He was a product of inbreeding, and he is their next oracle for their books that they live their
and
lives by.
He's drawing pictures in the books.
And it's always that they're always the people who choose what happens.
Right.
But in a way,
because they're pure.
Right. But also he's drawing and then they're deciphering what those drawings mean. So it's
right,
you know.
It's the Mormon Church.
Who's to say, did you love the dead people puppets at the end where they've been skinned and like stuck with like.
Yeah, that was nice.
Branches, straw.
That seems like
crafts.
Something my Aunt Gail would do.
Yeah.
She'd really be like, I'm going to turn them into beautiful things.
Yeah.
Just their skins.
Yeah.
So, hello.
I looked at you.
I did not know what we're talking about.
I looked at you like,
Jack's
going
to tell
like
me.
I didn't even know
we're
who you were.
We're doing an advertisement for
us.
Episode 11.
What?
Episode 11 of the Dance and Stuff show.
I'm literally Princess Alice now.
Which is.
Oh, the show, the TV show. Our TV show on YouTube.
With guest
Cole Escola, Aaron Markey, me,
us.
And Reed. And you should tune in because what we're talking about on it is gratitude. And what you find out is
gratitude.
Aaron and I can't recall any. And so are spoon-fed by our two Sagittariuses, Cole and Reed.
You're welcome.
So enjoy it. It's we love these queens and are so honored.
Rate, view, subscribe, YouTube.
Dance and Stuff show.
I saw another movie too.
Okay.
Did you finish Succession?
I never watched that.
Okay. That was for Jeremy. Me. That's for Jeremy and I.
Yeah.
It's a very satisfying end. Must say.
Well, and people have told me to watch it. There was something about, like, the pan-ins that they'll do where they'll punch in on someone with a camera that makes me laugh because it feels
it's very strange.
A soap.
I feel like they also let go of it as the season went on because they were like, oh, that's stupid.
Okay.
Also, it's not a... It's overstating to say that I watched it because it was a background.
It was on while you were sewing?
It was on while I was doing any number of things at home. Okay. I don't sew at home anymore, but...
I mean, it's very, like, Jeremy as well can have a show on and do, like, a bunch of things.
Yes.
I feel this need to kind of really watch
the
show.
I used it as a radio play, more so.
What was the other... Let's go to the movie.
I saw Judy.
Here we go.
You saw
so
it.
Did I.
Okay, interesting.
I saw it.
I saw it with Stuart, and again, I had a nap at the beginning.
I think that's okay. I didn't love the beginning. Well, here's the thing. I didn't love a lot of the production, and I'm here for Renee.
I felt it precise.
I am really here for Renee Zellweger. I thought she did a phenomenal job with an incredibly difficult, almost how do you do it when when it's like a god.
And it took me a while to settle into it. I was like, no. Immediately she started talking and like trying to be Judy. I was like, incorrect, absolutely no. And then by the end of the movie, when I'd settled into it being Renee Zellweger, I was like, oh, okay.
Well,
like,
we also have to really settle into that. Like, you can't reproduce this icon.
They shouldn't have done any flashbacks.
That was the main thing. I was like,
wow.
So ladies and other, if you haven't
movie
seen the movie
of
yet,
the
we're getting into spoilers. When they did everything could have been done by her age right then.
Yeah.
By like her not eating, by her interactions with people who have a quote unquote position of power.
Mm-hmm.
Everything could have been told and we would have seen. I mean, the movie is about child abuse, eating disorders, and addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And how child abuse manifested that for her. And I cried a lot.
Wow.
I cried a lot.
I found myself at the end, like, getting, like, welling up and being surprised. I was like, but I don't like this.
Oh, when the audience stood up?
I don't remember.
To sing with her?
Maybe.
When they sang Over the Rainbow with her?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, an incredibly moving moment, which didn't happen. You know what did happen?
No.
Bread rolls thrown at her and glass.
Wow.
People threw, like, glasses.
But did that thing happen where she interrupted the other guy's show after she'd already been fired?
I don't know about that. And my guess is no, because no one stood up and sang along with her.
I also found that like gay couple plot manipulative. I was like, why are we doing that?
Well, they were like, we want to let you know that she cared about gay people. And the thing I did, so I found it manipulative, but I did love the idea of her being so lonely and having no one that she would go and hang out with fans,
yeah,
and they would be friends,
yeah,
for that time. And I cried in that. I cried and she was like, do you have anywhere to go eat?
Uh-huh.
I really was like, lost it.
Chuck was like, me too.
I fully
I'm also a lonely star.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's a real, I mean, well, it is such a movie of what, of the levels. I mean, can you imagine at that level of being an entertainer? I mean, as someone who, I think, if you were a child actor and then you continued on to perform into your adult life,
mm-hmm.
those things, you're haunted by those things and haunted by these ideas of wanting to take care of an audience, wanting to take care of people.
There's a thing nowadays in these biopics where people are musicians of the olden times where they, rather than lip sync to the real singer, they sing the songs.
She did it. Renee sang it.
They're all doing that these days, where they're like, I'll do it.
Is that what the Queen did from Freddie Mercury?
I think that was like a digital kind of like...
manipulation.
Right. I think they were like, you're going to sing it, but then we're going to amp it up because like obviously...
Well, and Renee frequently sang it live on the
She
stage.
Did. I was like, that's singing.
Yeah.
It's not Judy. But right. like, Judy wasn't singing really, really well at that point.
I so know, but okay. also like that voice is... I mean, come on.
So distinct. That's what was hard. Well, but she did a very admirable job.
I thought she did a fantastic job, and she should definitely be nominated. And,
she will. I mean,
how could she politics. Not be? And but, Renee, we'd love to have you on.
Come on. But this stuff with her kids was heartbreaking in the telephone booth. And
absolutely.
The stuff where at the end where they put up that thing where it's like she died when she was 47. And you're like, oh my God.
I mean, I knew that.
I didn't know that.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
But also like the way that those titles came up at the end of the movie, sort of
with
like
glittering. Yeah.
I was like, okay. It was as if to say like, My Little Ponies are fun and beautiful. But it was like, she died.
It was. I was really like with the flashbacks, also because the Me and My Shadows, the Lorna Luft biopic about Judy Garland. Lorna Luft was her daughter, and she wrote this mm-hmm. book, and then it was turned into this miniseries that Judy Davis mm-hmm. would do. And I saw that years and years ago and cried. And
how would you compare Judy Davis to Renee Zellweger? Judy Davis, to me, doesn't have the same kind of bone structure, and Renee Zellweger did sort of capture the like frailness of it
all. Judy Davis is just sort of, I find her to be a more sort of fierce,
yeah,
like intense presence, mm-hmm. and also has like a very different career than I feel like Renee Zellweger must have brought some of her own kind of feelings about career into the work. How hunched she was and how far her head was forward mm-hmm. was so Judy Garland towards the end. And I mean, the Judy Davis one, it's all, my point being, they both look like made for TV.
Absolutely. It was a Hallmark movie.
I really felt like this movie looks made for TV, mm-hmm. and I feel a little bummed about that.
Yeah, me too.
Because Renee Zellweger's performance was so great, and I find this material so moving. And the production didn't get it through. You know who I was obsessed with?
Finn,
we love Finn, but
we
love Finn. And, you know, beautiful, charming, but I was obsessed with the girl who is the doctor and the makeup person. She's not quite a big part. She comes with the handler to Judy Garland's hotel when Judy has to go on that night for the first night.
Uh-huh.
And she's been up all, like, night uh-huh. into the next night. And she...
Did she give her a shot?
No. She's like, stick out your tongue. And then she goes, no spots, no fever, she's fine.
Uh-huh.
And then she starts putting on, like, lipstick on her. And Judy goes... Are you a nurse or a makeup person or what? And she says something to the effect of, sure, you know.
Whatever you want.
Yeah, and I laughed so hard. And I really thought that actress is a friend of Heather Lang's I've met.
Oh.
But I don't think so.
I really liked the actress who played the, like...
Handler?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's from Chernobyl. She was great. She played the wife of the firefighter guy who, like, really melts.
Oh, right.
But she has
that. She did a great job.
She's an excellent, she's a very feeling actress.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it also, like, did a great job at being, like, a restrained British person.
Yes.
I mean.
But who, she loved Judy.
Yes. How could you not?
They all loved her.
I really cried at the cake at the end when she, like,
when
had that slice
a bite
of cake.
And she couldn't believe it.
Well, she turned it. Around a bit. I, like, was crying.
She was handling it as if she'd never seen cake. She was like, what? And then she put it in her mouth and she was like, crazy. This is delicious.
Yeah. I really... Be relatable for if you struggle with eating anything. Mm-hmm. I was just, like, full tears, full crying. And then she took the bite and then she said, you know, maybe I was just hungry. I was like... sobbing
the whole time.
There were a lot of moments, and I did cry with a gay couple. I said that already. And I also,
those soupy eggs made me sick. That really made me sick.
Cream in the eggs.
You can put cream in eggs. That made no sense.
Yeah, you can.
But I mean, maybe they put way too much because I was like, those should be coming together by now. But and then it was baby vomit in that pan. And
it really was.
Absolutely not.
It really was. So we did it. We saw it.
We saw Judy.
The flashbacks were, and that was true about, because I was reading, like, what was true, what wasn't. Judy Garland said that Louis Bemire would, physically grope her a lot. And as she got older, she finally told him to stop it. But he would put his hand over her breast and say, you sing from here.
Uh-huh.
And she wrote in something, you know, I was glad I didn't sing from another part of my anatomy.
Oh, right. Did she really jump in that pool during her staged birthday party?
I don't know. That I don't know. I don't.
I did
don't
like that. I love the cut to it being like an aquarium tank, as if.
Uh-huh, right.
I was like, I'm sure they made it in glass.
As if. Yeah, yeah.
That reminded me of that movie, The Prestige. Did you see that?
Yes, that's about the two battling magicians.
It was a Christopher Nolan movie early on with Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman, one of my least favorites.
Oh, I like Hugh Jackman.
Really?
Yeah, he's a queen. I always appreciate. I always appreciate watching a queen do straight drag.
Yeah, I did like him as Wolverine.
Ah, sexy. What do you not like him in?
Oh, I find him tedious in anything else.
But what else has he been in?
Hard to say.
So there you go.
The Prestige.
Yeah, and he was in Boy from Oz on The Great White Way.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He was in some movie with Ashley Judd, which is a rom-com, and he has his shirt off a lot before he got Hugh Jackman.
What I've seen Hugh Jackman in the most? Introducing Bernadette Peters and Gypsy on the 19-whatever Tony Awards. On the 2003
intro.
Tony Awards. The number of times I have watched Bernadette Peters singing, doing Rose's Turn on YouTube, and like seeing Hugh Jackman being like, a woman on us in the back of the stage. I can't do it.
Do you remember the premise of The Prestige? It's kind of amazing.
It's two battling magicians, isn't it?
But one of them develops a technology by which he can kind of duplicate himself via like electricity or something.
Oh, like a hologram?
No, a real person, but he has to kill that person every day. And it's part of his magic act that like he becomes himself, but has to die every day during the drowns every single day.
When did this movie come out?
Early 2000s, I'm going to say.
Because I feel like I saw it, but I feel like I saw it in this way.
And Christian Bale is an actual identical twin in the movie and never lets anyone in on the secret. And Hugh Jackman is furious that, like, why don't I know how he's doing these magic tricks?
But Hugh Jackman has...
Hugh Jackman develops a scary technology that, like, kills his soul by, like, making himself every day and then murdering himself every day.
How does it kill his soul?
Because he's murdering himself every day.
Oh, he feels bad about it?
Well, something goes wrong psychologically.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Anyways, watch that movie. It's pretty good.
If you could duplicate yourself, what would you do with yourself?
Shows.
Would you duplicate yourself again, or would you just have it just be two of you? If you could make...
Just two.
How much... So you would stop at two. If you made one more, that'd be enough.
And I wouldn't want to kill myself, I don't think. I mean, I'm sure when I like saw and heard myself for a minute, I'd be like, oh, I wish you were dead. But no, I think in the long run, I'd be like, let's figure this out. You know, let's like figure out how to like have a life. And
it's good, isn't it? Grand, isn't it?
Like,
swell, isn't it?
You can substitute teach for me, blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. Maybe we can do a abstraction of The Parent Trap, something like that.
Would you let anyone in on that? Yeah, you'd let people in on that. You had this double.
Of course. It would be an article in the Times. Like, come see this play.
T for two.
There is a new Paul Rudd show on Netflix about how he has another one of himself who is like the happier version of him.
Just like post antidepressants. I know. There was something that I had on that I thought about for Midsommar that I wished for.
Mm.
In the beginning, it shows that she is taking Ativan, which is Xanax.
Mm-hmm.
And I, my kind of dream about like when you introduce a psychotropic. Is that what I would hope was that when she got over to Sweden, somehow like her meds were gone at some point, so that I'd have this other thing of being like, are her is this like just a, is this like a meds thing?
Is she just coming off
meds? Yeah. I'd wish that that would have been, because clearly she came from this family that had some sort of thing. So that was just my other
mental problem.
It was like the punch in on like Ativan. However, supposedly there is a director's cut of this movie that's much longer.
Well.
And I'd watch it.
All right.
I'm here for it.
I would come and nap through it with you.
I'm here for it. Oh, you need to see the beginning.
Oh, yeah, I would see the beginning.
You need to see the beginning.
Wait, what are we going to do? Oh, do you know that in the past, whatever, it's been months now, feels like, of seeing a show basically every day, but I literally went to a show every day for a week.
Wow.
Without pause.
Wow.
And that was hard. But also, I saw some good things. Mm-hmm. I saw some medium things. Mm-hmm. And I saw some bad things, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing horrific. Mm-hmm. Nothing horrific. But I'll do some highlights.
Great.
I'll do some highlights.
Highlights of
my week.
The dance world.
The right. dance world. Right. I saw
Weekend
the Forsyth
reveal.
Show.
Ah.
With
how'd you like
St.
it?
St. Peter and her son Dad. How did I like it? I liked it. I was challenged by it. Uh-huh. And it was in two sections, the first half almost completely in silence with like some nature sounds and stuff. And I found that section choreographically very busy, like too much articulate tension and so many. It felt unmetered and sort of unstructured in a way that I struggled with. But I talked to Zach Winokur at the intermission and he was like, he helped me a little bit because he was like, I really like heard the music through the dancing. I was like, oh, interesting. I didn't try to do that, which may have helped. Then the second half had the parameters of these Rameau songs. And that was really like freed up the choreography spatially and time-wise and was beautiful. I mean, Forsyth made these incredible little trios and duets and solos and stuff. Riley was unbelievable.
Of course. He's
unbelievable.
So amazing. I really, really,
I couldn't
really
believe
wish
it.
I could have seen
his
it.
His body, he's just so in there.
Yeah.
Ugh.
He's a star.
And I liked the outfits with the gloves and the socked sneakers. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very nice looking.
Socked sneakers?
Yeah, they had colored socks over soft sneakers.
Oh.
Which looked like, you know, colorful hooves. It was nice. And then there was the way that the shed was set up. It's this room that is so gargantuan. I'm sure you could do anything with it. But they set up these enormous bleachers. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine, like, Nyla times six.
Mm-hmm.
Check, 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 check. And then it looked as if you were almost looking at a diorama of like a stage, like one of those things that they test out sets in, mm-hmm. like a model of a set, but it was real because it was situated in such a vast space that it was like looking at a doll thing. It was amazing. And it was lit so beautifully. Anyways, that was Forsyth. Then
I was bummed I didn't get to see it,
sorry.
But I was really bummed that Jeremy didn't get to see it because I feel like Jeremy would have loved it.
I don't know. I don't know. Huh? I don't know.
Okay.
Honestly.
Okay.
It could have gone either way.
Interesting.
I saw the Wendy Whalen show at The Joyce. She is a national treasure. I love watching her like move into another phase of her body. I hope she does a show every other year for like the rest of her life. I just want to see what happens.
Incredible.
She's imminently watchable. You can't take your eyes off her.
Right.
I saw the Houston Ballet at that was the highlight of my week.
I have
to say. I saw Houston Ballet at City Center and Stanton Welsh, who I had a contentious relationship with as a young person when he was associate director of Ballet Met, programmed what was like one of the most brilliant programs for a ballet company to do at City Center in terms of scale, in terms of the proportion, like the length of the dances, etc. It started off with a lovely Mark Morris dance to Haydn music that had like moments of brilliance. It had an entire movement, which was a maypole dance, speaking of maypole dances, but without a maypole. And then there was a section which was a sextet with interstitial material by other dancers, but in a canon. And it was like so geniusly executed. It knocked my socks off. I was really like, wow. And the costumes by Miley Okamura were heaven. Heaven!
This is a new Morris piece?
It's maybe 4 years old.
Okay.
And we haven't seen it in New York.
Right.
And so it was such a pleasure. And then they did an Azure Barton dance, and I was skeptical because I was like, this is a dance that was made for Brezhnikov, and it has this like very saccharine music by this composer I don't know much about, named like Vladimir Martinov, who's a contemporary composer, but it sounds like as if a movie or a TV show person was like, we need you to compose some music that sounds like Tchaikovsky, right? Oh, okay. Like really, really romantic.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens in the music is it starts and you're like, ugh. And then it gets to a part where like it starts to, there's a glockenspiel and a wood block that's just start to go like, tock, 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 mm-hmm. tock, tock. And then it ends and then it starts again. 6 times.
Ugh.
And you're like, and it's violin concerto and it changes a little bit each time, but it's the same structurally.
I'm into this.
And the dance was like, it was both like structurally rigorous and minimal. And it was all men in these like black Long John Henley things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually really beautiful. And there's a part with chairs, which I know like that's hard, but like it was skillfully done. And I really liked it. Like almost like a tear fell from my eye at the end. And Connor Walsh is a principal in that company. He is maybe the greatest male dancer in America.
Wow.
He's really, I mean, the men in that company,
that's a huge compliment across the board,
tremendous. Harper, right. Oliver, etc. Amazing dancers. And Connor Walsh is something special because he is so grounded, but he is also, he's like so supple. Mm. He has these unusual proportions, very long legs on like, sort of like how I have like this boxy thing that scratches on my
I mean your
pelvis. Yeah. My rib cage is like big and my legs are long. He's like that, but like more, everything's so rounded. Mm. It's so beautiful. Anyway, he's obsessed. And
we'll have to have him on. I'm here for Azure, so we should have her on too.
Yeah, I'd love to. And then the third dance was, a Justin Peck with another original Sufjan score. And it was a quieter dance. And the costumes were beautiful. And the lighting was beautiful. It was not unexpected. It was very much in line with this like set of Sufjan Justin dances he's mm-hmm. made. But a good, strong dance. So, to have a ballet company come to New York and do a set of, like, all good things was, like, wow. And that Stanton Welsh didn't even put one of his own dances on the program. I was like, wow.
Right.
It was like, oh, you, like, read the reviews. Like, you know what the New York people want.
Mm.
I was like, thank you. That was good. I saw the new ABTs, and I think that Gemma and James made like really admirable and like strong efforts at, though not perfect, but like both of them showed a lot of who they are inside of these dances and like chose good music. And James, like, I think you maybe trying to show that he like has a lot of skill in making ballet dancing,
mm-hmm.
but there was also shades of camp, which mm-hmm. was important. And I hope that in the future that gets pushed further
mm-hmm.
because we like that is where James is such a master.
Mm.
He like so masterfully brings like comedy and camp into his content.
I again was bummed that I missed that. I called him from upstate to be like, hey queen, and we talked, and he sounded really excited about the pieces. It sounded like it on Wednesday. I spoke to him right before the show, then right after on Wednesday, and it was really exciting mm-hmm. for him. Yeah.
And Gemma's was just like an abundance of excellent material, though like probably too much.
Hmm.
So I think she was like, I got to get it all out, you know, because like maybe this will never happen again.
Gemma, you are hopefully going to have a long career. Another person we really need to have on the pod.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, like, it's crazy that we haven't had her on. I love her deeply. Yeah.
So I saw that. I saw, kind of the best show I went to this week. Wait till you hear this. It was a book signing.
Can't believe it.
And it was Mark Morris's book signing at the Mark Morris Dance Center.
I mean, this right for you. This show is for you because you love her so much.
I went with Pam Tanowitz, uh-huh. and it was a seated show. We were on the risers in the Mark Morris main studio, uh-huh. and it was set up like a performance with a curtain.
Uh-huh.
And every time someone was introduced, there was interstitial music played mm-hmm. by a jazz pianist. Mm-hmm. And then Mark and his co-writer had a conversation during which they sang and harmonized with one another. Apropos of literally nothing, Mark said some of the most unbelievable things during this thing.
How do you bring them out?
At one point, the writer was like, so we discussed how, you know, you don't notate your dances, but the score is the notation of the dances. And I wanted you to comment on that. And Mark was like, well, I wouldn't say it's so like black and white as that. That sounds so phony. And he was like, and I have like this sensitive bullshit meter. And he was like, and to say that is just a, and this was the verbatim. He goes, it's just a bunch of phony, baloney, fake ass bullshit. And then he goes, it's as if to say, when people say that, you know, Michelangelo like found the Statue of David in one piece of Carrara marble, as if he didn't like plan it, as if it just like appeared. And right. That was his example.
Right.
And that's how he said Carrera.
Yeah.
Carrera. And then...
She's a hoot.
During the Q&A, people started asking questions, and this old man raised his hand somewhere in the middle of the thing and was like, oh, I just have so many questions. I can't even pick. And then before he could finish his thought, Mark Morris says, one. And then the Mark Morris Dance Company did a short dance, which was lovely, six of the dancers. And then after the end of it, Mark was like closing down the show. He was just saying Bye Bye Blackbird. And while he was singing in the middle, he's like, okay, now you're going to sing with me. And like kind of nobody really did. He was like, I mean it. And then the audience literally started singing the song with him. It was incredible. It was an amazing show. And I did, he's considering coming on the pod.
Oh, he's considering it.
Yes, we talked after. He was like, and I know about your blog thing, and we'll discuss.
He called it a blog?
Yeah, he, I love you it. Know, huh? They don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't know. But he did, I went up to him in the book signing with Pam, and he introduced me to his co-writer, and he said... He called me, he said, he's a genius dancer and a genius designer.
Wow, Reese.
I said, irony coming from a real genius.
I love that.
Isn't that nice?
You are a genius dancer and a genius designer.
I'm okay. Wow. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, just
some people like and some people don't.
I mean, same for Mark Morris, queen. Sorry.
Absolutely, because
I don't know what to tell you.
One of my good friends.
One of my good friends
who saw the Mark Morris dance at Houston Ballet afterwards was like, did not like it. And I was like, okay, that's art for you.
I mean, look, art is subjective and people come in from their different viewpoints and ideas.
Ideas.
You know, it's, that's it.
That's it. Anyways,
I saw some incredible dances that I'm actually not going to talk about because I watched them on video, and you can only watch them at the library.
Oh, Clark Tippett.
I mean, I love Clark Tippett. These were not.
Okay.
No, I'm going to, it'll be in the, I found more of the heart of the presentation for This Is So in the Future in January, but I did, it's a lot. AIDS is, I can't. It's too...
AIDS is, I can't. And that's a real truth.
It's, I watched these dances that were so incredible that one of them made in 82. Mm-hmm. I was in at Dance Space Project watching. I was like, the number of times I've seen this dance. And I don't think the people who have made this dance know who this person is.
Right.
And this is so painful. It's unbearable.
The Lost Generation.
It is really the lost. And then, you know, we have like Mark, Terry, Neil, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There you go. There not you go. Forsyth. Jones. T. Jones.
We do have Forsyth, and you know, it's
right. We also have Bill Murray.
Our guest is here. Jeremy, will you get our guest?
Oh my goodness.
Because I guess the buzzer doesn't work.
Oh no.
Because I have received it did.
Yeah. Anyways, do we love you right now?
We love you.